Forsberg pulls up for three. Boom! Knocks it down! Curry from the corner at three. Puts it in. For overtime. Makes it. Garrett. Murray.
Welcome to the MVP cast with me, Mark Woods. My guest is someone who's hoping to be a happy camper over the next couple of weeks. And we're not just talking tents and singing Kumbaya. She's one of the hopefuls in the Great Britain women's squad, hoping to make it all the way to Riga for the start of Eurobasket later this month. We'd like to welcome now Hannah Shaw to the MVP cast.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us. You're in camp in Manchester. And I guess for those people who are outside this highly competitive elite environment, I guess the phrase training camp might mean different things. What is it in reality? Explain the mystery of this process of what a training camp is.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that all training camps I was a part of in the junior years used to fill me with dread before I'd go, because I knew it would be 3 2-hour sessions a day. It would just be really, really tiring. And now we're in senior, real elite basketball. We just train smart. So we'll do an hour to an hour and a half in the morning, really just working smart. So running through offenses, getting shots, but making sure everybody's body feels good and everybody's on the right page basketball-wise. And then in the evening, we do a really tough, really like gritty practice. So it's been a good few days since we started.
How much is that first few days about kind of bonding as a team and getting to know a few? There's a few new faces, of course, have come into the squad this time. And how much is it, do you secretly sit there and size up the competition?
You always size up competition. I mean, I speak to Nicolette every day and we're always like, oh, this person's been invited to camp. Have you seen them play? Do you know what this? So you always do that, whether you do it outwardly or whether you just think it yourself. But getting everybody into camp and just seeing people, it's all about, yeah, bonding, making sure you can figure out how they like to play, where they like to get the ball, what their strengths are. So it is really important, those first few sessions.
I mean, you're coming off a season, so there's a lot of people you haven't seen for a while, and there'll be some people you'll keep in touch with, some people you won't, maybe some people you just follow on social media. I mean, is there a little bit of the getting the gang back together and, you know, and trading stories about what you've been up to and the horror stories, I guess, over the campaign that some people will have?
Oh, definitely. The first like few days are always like, oh, did you enjoy your season? And it's either a resounding yes or a big no. Yes, it was fine sort of thing. So it's just good to be able to hear what everybody else's experiences were, because people on our team were playing all over, and it was just nice. It's just good to get everybody back, and everybody on this team gels really well. Even when you get a couple of new people in, or people maybe haven't played with the others in other teams, there's no outsiders really, and there's no like curveballs. Everybody seems to get on. And I think that's really helpful with this team.
I mean, most of the team have worked or been coached by Chema Buchetta up to now, but does he sort of arrive with a sort of a game plan or a playbook for everyone to sit down and go, okay, this is how our summer is going to roll?
Yeah, so we do get in, we have an overall schedule. Things always chop and change throughout the day, or we just, if someone's sick or if someone's hurt, we do have to make allowances, but the overall thing tends to be the same, or at least similar to what the schedule was at the start. But we do come in, and I think most people know how Chema wants to work, and then because everybody is very happy with that, it's very easy for other people to come in and see that this is how we're going to do things, I think. So it's nice. It's really nice for us to have that.
Is there a sort of natural progression, I think, over the first few days where people are, you know, some people have come straight from season, some people like yourself have had a few weeks off. I mean, do you sort of see that environment where you have to, I suppose, get back up to that game sharpness for a couple of days to be mentally locked in for this, or how comfortable is that process for you?
There's definitely a few days at the start where, you know, people have been off doing things, and regardless of whether you've been working out or not, you've not been playing at this intensity or in this gym. Maybe you've just been working out by yourself. Like in my case, I've been scrimmaging against my brother's local league team, and they're all 6'7" and above, and we play with a 7. So for me to come back and play with the sticks and then play with women and actually be able to play inside as opposed to float around on the wing, you know, it's at least one or two sessions before you get back into that completely.
How useful was that, sort of going against the boys and tell them just to, you know, treat me like anyone else and knock me around?
I think the only person who, actually, no, all the boys are fine. They were, they all treated me, they were all respectful, they were all nice. They all tried to, they didn't go out of their way to try and maybe block my shot or anything. Well, apart from my brother, but that's about it.
That's just bragging
I like
rights.
Playing with them, though. It is. He just knows I'm obviously better than him, but he is 6'8", so he's got that. That over me. My sister's only good because she's a girl. I'm like, okay, well, you know, you enjoy.
Oh, it's good to see you, but sexism lives on even in the household.
I know. I mean, he's one of my biggest fans. He's always asking me how camp is. He's always really proud of my basketball achievements, but if it's just me and him playing basketball, he's always going to try and make me look stupid.
That's all right. I'm sure that's how much. I mean, did that ever, do you think that some in small way contributed to you being good or as good as you are?
Yeah, maybe. Because I've always been more dominant, like looking than other people. Like I'm a lot taller and bigger. And then my sister is my height and my brother's 6'8". So as a kid, I was always, I wouldn't say picked on, but I was definitely like the bottom of the pile. So that's, I kind of have that kind of like a competitive edge, I think, because of that.
That's, it's just trying to prove yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely my parents' favorite child, though, so.
And if he's listening, she really means that.
Oh, they know.
I mean, you mentioned the break that you had before the camp began, and you hit the road big time over in the States in the Midwest. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I went to go and see my old teammate, Ashley Harris. Mm-hmm. She lives in Iowa, which is a state I'd actually never been to. So I went over to visit her and her new baby, which was nice. And she lives in Dubuque, which is right on the Mississippi River. It also borders Illinois and Wisconsin. So that's three states I can knock off pretty much in a day.
Are you one of those people? Are you one of those
people? Drive around and see the Midwest.
But are you one of those people that are like, yeah, how many have I got to get to 50?
Well, I like to keep track, but I mean, I don't know if I can count it if you just drive in and out.
Oh, you can. I've done that.
But yeah, I do kind of want to. I do want it. But also, I don't think there's much in some of the states. So do you need to drive through it, really?
There were no charms.
But I'm already
Nebraska.
At 25, so.
Oh, so you're counting. That's fine. I think I'm 20, so you're up there. I mean, what did you see? What was the highlight of the trip, other than obviously seeing your friend and their new child?
Super random stuff, actually. I always Google roadside attractions. Like, they're really weird things the states do, like the world's biggest frying pan or something like that. And we went to the world's biggest popcorn ball.
Nice.
Which is exactly what it sounds like. Really weird. But I made a stop and have a look at that one. Which was pretty good. We stopped at the Kevin Costner film. Is it Kevin Costner with Field of Dreams?
Yes.
Yes. We stopped because that is filmed not far from, well, was filmed not far from our house. So we stopped and went to the Field of Dreams, where it's the house and the pitch, and you can go and walk around that. So that was kind of cool. I mean, we had a snowstorm that day, and I was wearing sandals because it was probably 20 degrees before we left. But that's the Midwest, I guess.
I mean, is it useful, do you think, to have had that period of decompression after the season, a long season, to get before you get back into the rigors of camp?
Definitely. My season in Spain, I don't think it was physically as demanding as I thought it was going to be, but mentally it really was. And so it was nice to be able to finish that and go and do something totally non-basketball related. And just to go and relax and not really do much apart from hang out and not be on like a really rigorous schedule. So I think it is really important just mentally to be able to go and do that.
And is it trickier though when you go to the States, because the challenge, I imagine, is harder to stop putting your on like about 10 kilos in 2 weeks?
Yeah, so for the first week I didn't do any, I did no exercise really. I think I just walked to like a coffee shop. And then the second week I was like, okay, I need to go and lift at least, or I need to go and have like a little run. Which is good because Ashley would work during the day and then I would go and get that out of the way. And then going out for dinner in the evening, I mean, it'd be rude not to have jumbo margaritas when they're only $5.
Especially,
I'm sure, but I was mindful.
Especially though, when you're getting all those weird looks about walking to a coffee shop, you know, very un-American thing to do.
Yes, super weird.
Yes. I mean, you mentioned the season.
Super weird.
You were playing for a team called Cordegada, which is in the second division of the Spanish Liga Femenina. I mean, from having played domestically and obviously been to college in the States, how did that move come about last summer?
So, because Gemma was telling me that I needed to go and play abroad, and I know I did, I know I needed to go, and I would have gone the year before had it not been for the Commonwealth Games, and I wanted to make sure I was going to be eligible for that. Mm-hmm. So this, I think, it was a move that probably was a long time coming. But so I managed to speak to an agent and get this sorted, but I think I got it sorted within maybe a week and a half of speaking to this agent, because I was super late getting it done. I was playing a season in Australia over the summer and just enjoying it so much that I kind of just wanted to stay. But then real life hit me and I was like, no, I need to go and get another season done somewhere else and get that under my belt.
I mean, you average stats, 9 points per game, and I think it was 6 rebounds per game. So, like, you know, solid numbers for the year. What was the level of competition like in terms of what you were expecting, in terms of what you find?
I think it's the level of competition was pretty much what I was expecting. It's a much quicker game. I think the players are better than maybe in the UK. And I think the game is it's definitely a higher standard than the WBBL, if just maybe a little. It's not crazy or anything. I found it frustrating that I'd be playing on a team where we'd have 7 people. Mm-hmm. 7 or 8, we'd very rarely get to go 5-on-5 in practice. And I think that really damaged our chances at playoffs. It was frustrating for me. I don't feel like I fitted into the system as well as I could have done. Because at the start of the season, I had a couple of like 20-point games. And then as we went on, I feel like I got used quite a bit less. And that was frustrating, because then that's mentally another thing that you have to try and deal with as you're going through the rest of the season. But
how do you do, you know, that? Do you adjust though, or do you kind of just have to suck it up, or what? How do you cope with that not quite fitting that way?
It's a bit of both. I mean, you have to try and do everything that is asked of you, which, you know, if you're not used to doing something, it is difficult. But obviously, you've got to try. There's no point in going and trying to do something your way consistently if that's not getting the results, or if that's not getting you your court time or your anything like that. So it is definitely a bit of both. You have to try everything that you can, and then you also just have to deal with it, because at the end of the day, as a player, you're not the coach. You don't control what happens. You don't control minutes or anything like that. So, I mean, it really is definitely just both of them.
What was the lifestyle like, though? Because living in Spain is not the worst thing in the world.
Oh, definitely not. But when all my friends heard I was going to Spain, they were like, yay, we can't wait to visit. That's amazing. And I was like, well, actually, I'm in Galicia, I've been twice as a kid. But I went in the summer, and it is beautiful and it is lovely and warm in the summer. Over winter, I think it rains more than my hometown of Buxton, which is the wettest town in the UK. And the rain there was aggressive. It was torrential. It would be for 24 hours straight. We'd have our court would get shut down a couple of times because the weather was so bad that the court was then slippy. But my favourite part about Spain is always going to be the coffee and the food, because coffee is €1 and they bring you cake. And really, what more can you ask?
The simple pleasures. I guess the question is,
and I need that sometimes.
I guess the question is, would you go back to Spain next season? Would you like another overseas experience somewhere else? What's the thinking now?
I think I'd be quite happy going back to Spain next season, but I mean, I would prefer to go somewhere else, because I'm 28 now. I'm going to be 29 this year. My years of playing at a high standard. I'm not Steph or Rachel for sure. I can't imagine I'm going to be playing at 30, 36 years old. So I would like to go somewhere else and see another part of the world, but we'll see how the summer goes and how that decision gets made.
I mean, you talked about playing in Australia. I mean, it was the QBL, which is the Queensland League, and you were playing for the Sunshine Coast. And I must admit, but ahead of this chat, I'd obviously had heard of the QBL for guys like Jamel Anderson who are away playing in the summer, but I wasn't aware there was a women's league. Mm-hmm. What's that like?
It's amazing. I had such a great time. Australians complain that basketball isn't a big sport over there, but they've obviously not spent enough time in the UK, because over there, we were getting fans and we were getting plenty of them. And their clubs all have lots of sponsors. They have places that the team go to eat. And I just think things like that are really important when you build a club or you're trying to build a brand. And so it did feel like it's playing a more professional level. But the QBL, so I've played, let me think about other British, Amy Brown, who played for Manchester a few years ago. Mm-hmm. She was playing for another team in the QBL. She grew up playing for them. And Helen Naylor played quite a few years ago in the same league. So you get, there has been a couple of Brits going over.
So if you had another free summer/Australian winter, that's where top of the list.
Oh, if I wasn't for Eurobasket, I'd be there right now.
Your kind of career trajectory has been quite unusual in the sense that you go to college and then you come back to this country. Then you take a year out, which is very unusual to then come back from it. Most people, when they get the year out, are gone for good. And as you said, I think it was a tweet or something, or a message or a biography or something, you worked in a bar and partied for a year. And that was pretty much life. What took you out of the game for 12 months?
Well, I came back and played a couple of years. I played for Damien and Cardiff for 1 year, and then I moved to Manchester and played for Jim there. And it was getting to the point where I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with my life, and I needed to get a job. And so I had a bar job, and I tried to play at the same time. And that, you know, we play every Saturday, and we practice late into the evening. So at the end, it didn't really fit. And the year I played for Manchester, when it was still the National League and not the WBBL, we weren't great. And it wasn't really something that I didn't really enjoy it as much. So I took a year out, not intentionally. I just thought, you know what, I need to work. I need to earn more money. So I managed this like football bar, had a great time, learned some pretty solid job, real world experience, I'd say, which has been helpful. And then I got this message from, well, I got lots of messages from Dave Greenaway when I moved back to Nottingham, just saying, oh, Hannah, how are you doing? Just checking up, you know. And it was never like, come back to Nottingham, come back to Nottingham, come back to Nottingham. He was always just checking in and seeing how I was. But I knew he was trying to get me to go back. And then I think I was at a game watching my friend Kate Butters play for Cardiff. And they were playing, I think I'd gone to watch her play against Loughborough. I'd gone by myself and I just wanted to go and see her. And I found that I was getting really upset watching the game, because I'd really missed playing. So that was a big thing for me. And then further on into the summer, it's getting more and more messages from Dave. And I thought, you know what, like, I'm going to go and practice and see what it's like. And then that was the start of it.
Is physically that quite hard? Because, you know, it's like anything, you go out, you're enjoying yourself, you're not disciplining yourself to look after yourself physically. And then suddenly you have to make that conscious decision. Okay, yes, I've been missing this game, but I also know I have to get back in shape and have this certain, to a certain degree, a kind of lifestyle that facilitates me being fit and healthy.
Yeah, so I tried my hardest to get back into it, and it did take me quite a while. And I've never been like the quickest or the most athletic, lean player anyway. But it has taken me longer, I think, to get back to this position. Because normally if I can overcompensate, if I'm going to be slower than someone, then I'm most certainly stronger than them. So I try to always use that as to my advantage. So it was tough, but I think really I did manage it. I mean, did have two and a half really good years in Nottingham, for team awards at least. So, you know, I'm really happy with how it worked out.
Let's pause the podcast for just a moment to ask for your help. We'd like to produce more episodes of the MVP cast. That's more conversations and more stories you've not heard before from around the world of basketball. To do that,
We'd love your support in becoming a patron. If you value the show, why not pledge a few pounds each month to help keep it going? We'll even give you a shout out as our way of saying thank you. Find out more by going to MVP247, clicking on the podcast page and going to the patron link.
Hannah Shaw's our guest. You've had two university experience, or two collegiate experience, we can call it. You're Miami in the States, then you did art and design back in, not at your college in Nottingham. And educationally wise, because what was your major in Miami?
I was just a freshman, so I was technically undeclared.
So there was no kind of particular specialization. But yeah. How important is, I guess, having a sort of another passion or a learning experience being alongside everything?
I think it's definitely really important. The thing I hated the most about being in college in the States was I hated university. So I know I have been to college over here. I never really knew what I wanted to do. And then I really struggled with then having to go and do classes and stuff. If I'm not interested in something, I find it very difficult to concentrate and put myself through. So like that was my reason for coming back. I didn't want to be there to do that. I found it really, like, really hard. But then I think it is really important once you do find something that you enjoy to like go 100% into it, because you need to have something in your life that you're so passionate about and you want to keep improving and just to keep you mentally stimulated. Because if other things aren't happening or other things aren't going well, then you need to have other fallback things to do.
And your passion that you find is?
Yeah, I'm still working on that, actually.
It's plenty of time.
I mean, I like a gin and tonic, but it's not. I can't really have that as a passion.
It can be called a hobby, so that's fine. I think it could be classified. Yes.
I mean, I would very much, in my pipe dream, is I would really like to make scotch. Well, it wouldn't be scotch, but I'd really like to make whiskey with Peak District botanicals. And then whilst we're making whiskey and you have to let it mature, I'd like to make gin. Ah. So that's me and my brother's pipe dream.
Future options.
Yeah.
You talked about the Miami year, and obviously a lot of people enjoy college. They go over there. You know, not everyone gets the best basketball experience. There's maybe better places mm-hmm. you can go. I mean, personally for you, was that a year wasted or did you take anything from that?
No, definitely a good year basketball wise. Katie Meyer, the coach I had, is a phenomenal coach. She's just a wonderful, wonderful person. I still get messages from her now and I'm like, well, you know, I only played for you for a year and I left. So she doesn't really have any reason to want to contact me, but she's such a nice, like, giving person that she'll stay in touch. And I think the stuff that I learned from her, she was All-American when she played at Duke, and then she went and played pro in Belgium, and that was obviously a long time ago, but she, you know, she was a really good player. So being able to play for her, and two of my teammates then went on to become big players within the WNBA, so playing on that team, I think I got much better. It also taught me that it doesn't matter how much you run, you're probably not going to collapse, because that is. And my strength and conditioning coach's favorite thing to say was, your body will give out before your mind. And I was like, that is a psychopath's thing to say. That is crazy. But I guess he was right.
And when you go back now, I mean, do you still find yourself applying those little lessons?
Yeah, I still think if I'm running or if I'm doing conditioning, I think you've more than likely done something worse than this. Just keep going. And I think that's, for that especially, I think going through that year made me know that really I can do anything. Because it was difficult. I don't think social media was as big when I was a kid. And it was definitely harder to, like, I didn't have WhatsApp and internet all the time on your phone. So speaking to people at home, I think, was much more difficult. So it was definitely a kind of a lonely experience, but like one I'm definitely really happy to have had.
And if you were to do it again, your 18-year-old self, where do you think you would, what path would you choose to make yourself a better player and pursue an opportunity?
I would, if I had this hindsight, I would say just stay and get through it, because I think the opportunities that I would have had if I'd have stayed and played there under her and in that environment for 4 years would have made me an infinitely better player. But what's the point in having regrets? So try not to think about it as much because I don't really see the point.
You'll always have Miami.
Yeah, that's true. If you want to go on holiday, it's nice for a couple of days, but there's not as much to do if you're there for quite a while.
No, I went there last summer and a couple of days seemed to be quite enough. As pretty little it was, that was quite sufficient. International experiences you've had, and the rarity that one of the rare experiences you've had are quite unique, is you played in a world championship for 3-on-3.
Yes.
And not many people have got to do that because of, if I can put it mildly, the dismal failure of British basketball to actually look at 3-on-3, even though it's in the Olympics. But in saying that, what was your experience of a world championship?
Oh, it was incredible. The FIBA 3-on, I think I'd done 6 European championships by then. Mm. And I was saying, I think this has been my favourite FIBA tournament to be a part of. Because it was just, a 3-on-3 makes everything such a good vibe because there's obviously less people. So you're kind of all in it together. Like all of the teams are in the same hotel. Everybody was probably travelling to the games on the same bus. And it's just much more of a community feel. I think we had loads of media stuff done. And it's nice to travel in a small group, I think. Obviously, it's nice to be a part of your team when you're 12 and you've got 6 staff. But when you're travelling and it's just 4 players on the women's and men's team and then 2 or 3 members of staff, I think it's a really nice little community feel. But 3-on-3 is obviously so big now, and it is only going to get bigger, I think.
I mean, it's a strange one because people are starting to look a little bit more towards it, and too late for Tokyo Olympics, which is a shame. Mm-hmm. But obviously Commonwealth Games in Birmingham 2022 will have 3-on-3. But what in your mind is the secret to getting a good roster together? Because with 5-on-5, you know vaguely everyone's sort of familiar with the mix of players, positions, etc. What makes a good 3-on-3 team?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if you've seen many games, but the officiating is... there isn't really much. So I think you definitely need to have some tough players. And you've just got to have smart, gutsy players because they're really, you're not going to beat anyone in transition. It's very rare that you're going to be able to move the ball so much to get the open player because there is only 3 of you. And, you know, there's not a lot of people to be distracting. So you've just got to get some really smart, quick players who are just able to make solid plays, whether you're playing 1-on-1, 2-on-2, or 3-on-3. Like and it's so much fun to watch and so much fun to play because it's more physical, it is quicker, and I think it's just got that bit more of like a star, like power to it. It's fun and it's exciting and it's quick. So it's a quick deliverer.
I mean, it sounds like you think there probably should be more opportunities in this country to take teams to big tournaments and, you know, try and qualify for things.
Oh, definitely. I'd love it if we could move towards that, for sure. Definitely not take anything away from 5-on-5 because I do think 5-on-5 is proper basketball. It's the game. But 3-on-3 is always coming up. And I do think it helps at development with kids, teaching them passing and spacing and just some decision making. But then it is also a lot of fun. So just for that kind of community vibe, I think it's great. I'm slightly disappointed the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham isn't going to be 5-on-5, especially with how well we did. But obviously, if I can try and put myself forward to be 32 years old playing 3-on-3, I'd be really happy with that.
Why not? I mean, you might be the oldest player there, given the average 3-on-3 player, but why not?
I'll have a go. You don't have to run as much, so maybe I'll be fine at 32.
It's just, except for Birmingham, it is outdoors, so I just wonder what the weather's going to be like.
Yeah, definitely not like Greece when we played.
Yeah. We mentioned Commonwealth, but let's look back to last Commonwealth. And there was one image that I had. I remember the first quarter of the final, and I think you were guarding Liz Cambage. And as big though you are.
Yeah, she's massive.
She's a monster. And I wonder, is that the toughest challenge that you've ever faced?
Definitely, definitely. Because even if I played against someone who's maybe 6'6", I'm like, oh, 2 inches, it's not a big deal. Like, it's just one of those things. But she is so much taller. And because she's so much taller and she has that elevated view, I mean, I was talking about this the other day. It's much like when I played under 14s and I was at least a foot taller than everybody else. So nobody affected my shot really, and you didn't even, your defender doesn't phase you because you can't see them, you're already just looking up. But you know, on top of that, I don't want to say sizes, you know, she's only good because she's 6'8". She's got a great shot, she's got a great touch, she, you know, she's such a dominating presence on defense, so you know, she is going to be one of the best players in the world.
I mean, she's a very unique personality. And I remember during London 2012, when I was helped to manage the team of that was effectively running the media at basketball. And she was always one of the players that was incredibly nice to every single volunteer. She was absolutely super nice. But on the court, you see her, she can trash talk with the best of them.
Oh, I wouldn't call it trash talk. I feel like trash talk needs to be somewhat smart or like, what's the word? No, that's going to be a terrible thing. That's going to come back to haunt me. I feel like it needs to be warranted. I just felt like the things she was saying were just really petty. But, you know, all of her teammates love her. I've not met anyone really who's played with her and doesn't think that she's great. So maybe, she, you know, it's just against other people.
Especially the English.
Yeah.
Even though she was born here.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I know you're Scottish, but like everybody hates us and, you know, we're not quite Millwall, everybody hates us and we don't care. But, you know, everybody does hate us. We just have to get over it.
Except I'm not Scottish, I'm Northern Irish, but, you know, still.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry for saying that. No, it's not
commonly
Scottish.
Made mistake.
Sorry, no, I didn't mean that. But do you live in Scotland?
Yes, it's 20 years of living here. Everyone mixes the two accents up.
So, there you go. Yeah. That's really terrible. I'm so sorry.
That's quite all right. I'll let you off. We're talking about, we're talking about WNBA, and there was a tweet you made a few weeks ago, and I was quite intrigued because I was thinking something similar to that. The WNBA started the season a couple of weeks ago. We kind of watched it this year in Sky Sports, which is, it was great. But they've had this campaign, and essentially it's about the trolls who troll female basketball players, which happens on a regular basis, not probably as much as it used to be, but you know, the ones, guys that say, oh, you guys, it's like watching the men in slow motion, or you know, I could guard Liz Cambage, for example. And it had players reading out trolling tweets or messages and responding to them. And your opinion on that was not that this was the best way to kind of show up these things. What was your take on it when you saw that?
I cannot understand why you would want to promote something by starting off on a negative. I don't understand why you would say, oh, all of these people, all of these inconsequential people that don't matter, that live at home with their parents, which I do as well, so you know, that probably shouldn't say that. But all of these people with no display pictures, with 8 followers, are saying, oh, get back in the kitchen. No, just forget them. They don't matter. So why address them? Why promote your sport by talking to people who you're probably never going to convince? Why aren't you going out into schools? Why aren't you showing, like, little girls who want to play basketball, why aren't you showing them that you can go and do this, or you can go and travel the world, or you can be one of the best players in the world, and you can have all of these amazing fans, because the WNBA fan base is getting bigger. All the pictures from the last couple of weeks from the stadium, they're pretty full, if not completely full. It's now got better media coverage. And I just think, don't bother with people that don't matter. Show your sport. Show all the good things about it. Show, yeah, no, it's not common for women to dunk. And yeah, the game is obviously slower than the men's. But then show all the better things about it. Show the fact that Sue Bird and Tarazi are amazing, like, passers. Like, show that Cambage is 6'8" and shooting threes over people and not even being bothered by her defender. Like, why can't you promote that side of the sport?
The one thing that bothered me watching it, it was a different take to you on it, is that they had each of the players, and Brittany Griner was the only one I can remember exactly precisely who was involved in it, who I've spoken to, and it's a great conversation when you get her just one-on-one. She's got very interesting things to say. But the responses were terrible. And if I'm going to put my players in that position to respond to them, I'm going to A, sit down with a script writer, or sit down with them and come up with something funny and witty. They were the lamest responses almost in every case, and it made them look bad.
Yeah.
Is that the best you can come up with as a response? If you're going to put you in a position to respond to the trolls, do it funny, or do it with something that's going to be a put down, but don't do it with like, oh, no, that's not right. It did not make them look good in any way.
No, not at all. I think they'd obviously try to do the celebrity reading mean tweets.
Yeah, like the Jimmy Kimmel skit stuff. Yeah.
And I just think, you know, you need to pick very funny ones, or you need to maybe speak to somebody about how they're going to respond to something, because yeah, they were. It felt like the players weren't really into it as well.
Yeah,
because
it didn't
then
show up.
Yeah, it wasn't the best at all.
How much? I mean, when you're particularly when you were in the WBBL, but you know, overseas in Spain, if it's the same experience, but do you sense that over the last 5 years, the perception of women's basketball has improved in terms of, yeah, there's always going to be a comparison with men's basketball and there's no way around that. But do you sense that people appreciate now the positives of women's hoops rather than worrying about what those differences are?
For sure. I think it is getting better. Definitely. I think social media is always going to be behind things like this. It's such a big tool when you're promoting things. And if you look at yesterday for the Hoopsticks All-Star Classic, the under-19s game, that for being the first women's game that they've done, that obviously had an incredible turnout, and being able to stream it, and I think everything I've seen online about that has been positive. So, I mean, women's basketball is getting bigger, and obviously it's going to be such a long time before we're anywhere near the men's, if we can even get to being like the men's. But then you need to just look at the women's England football team, and they are now moving forward. The World Cup this year is going to be absolutely massive. And I think if we can maybe try and follow in the footsteps of them a little bit more, then hopefully we can keep growing as a sport. I hate Manchester City, but they were the best ones with their, it's not men's football, it's not women's football, it's just football campaign that they did. Mm. And they amalgamated both their social media accounts. And I think stuff like that is so important. And then hopefully that can help us with the more European way of thinking, that you don't go and watch, say you don't go and watch Leicester Riders men's team play. You go and watch, oh, sorry, you're not a Leicester Riders men's team fan. You're a Leicester Riders club fan, which means if they have a wheelchair basketball team, if they have a netball team, if they have a women's basketball team or anything like that, you're a supporter. You're part of that whole community. And I think that's really important going forward.
I think that breaks down the barriers as well, because yes, there are lots of people who just watch the men's game. There's people who just watch the women's game. But I think it's always been strange that people can't appreciate the other, even if it's not your core fandom.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I always bash netball because I don't like to play it, but I can always appreciate that, you know, it's a relatively difficult sport to play, and any sport at a high level has taken a lot of dedication and a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money. But just because I don't want to watch it doesn't mean I'm constantly going to be tweeting out my hatred for it or going on about how rubbish I think the players are or anything like that, because that's not helpful to anyone. That's just waste my own time. I'm not their target audience when they're trying to build their brand, so why do I need to go back at them?
Although it's always going to be a poor version of basketball, really.
Oh, it's rubbish. not wearing a dress.
Yes, it's not. It's contrived. It's pointless. But there you go. The netball, the basketball fans, bete noir.
I mean, I'm just complaining, but they all get paid for this, so whatever.
Exactly, yes. Yes, they're doing very well for themselves.
Probably picked the wrong sport.
No, definitely not. Last couple of things. I mean, Eurobasket is just a few weeks away, and we're all kind of excited about being over there and seeing what happens in that. And obviously Olympic qualification places are places to be absolutely accurate. Places in the Olympic qualifiers are at stake. But when you guys have sat down over the last few days at camp, has there been an immediate level of expectation set about what might be achieved there?
I mean, I feel like we've not been explicitly told what our expectations are, because everybody in camp kind of knows it and kind of feels it, and I think that's the best way for us to be. I think if we are all on the same page or concentrating, how can I say this? We're all working at the same pace and moving forward together, then we're obviously going to achieve what we want to. But I think going out right and saying we're going to get this and we're going to do this, I think that you never know what's going to happen. You never know how you're going to play or how you're going to react or what could happen. If there's anything that's something you cannot control. So I think, I mean, it's a great place to be in camp because we're so positive. Everybody works hard for each other. Everybody dives on the floor, everybody scraps for loose balls. I don't think I've played on many teams that are as unified as this one. So it's nice to come in and everybody has the same buzz about them, that we are working towards something incredibly special.
Is there any motivation, or even perhaps is it a distraction, that people look at the sport as it stands at the moment and realise the importance of the women's team doing something amazing at Eurobasket for everything else in this sport right now?
I think so, yes. Because at the moment, we're obviously the only ones in contention for, if I'm right, we're the only ones in contention for a major tournament coming up.
Yes.
Yeah, that is correct. So obviously, I mean, if we're the only ones at the moment, then it's big. And I think that of all the teams, we have the capability to do something like that. So, I mean, we just want to do well and hope that we can make British basketball even better and keep moving forward so that we can promote the sport and we can hopefully get it back to where, or get it to a new stage, a new place where it can excel. So,
and obviously, only 12 shall go. There's a few, you know, a few will miss out. Is there that sort of nervousness every time it comes to one of the, either, you know, 13 will go to Slovenia this week, or when it comes to the range of cuts, do you all sit there and sweat a little bit the night before when you're forgetting to find these things out?
Definitely. I always panic about stuff like that. I'll sit in my room, probably making my roommate really nervous, like, oh my God, are we getting cut today? What's going on? But I mean, that's only really on the day that I know it's happening, in the evening. Because realistically, you can only do your best. You can only try as hard as you can. You can only try and put yourself in the best position. So at the end of the day, if you can do all of that, everything else is out of your control. So there's no point in panicking or getting stressed, because that is taken out of your hands, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Go in and perform. You knock people over. You channel your inner Liz Cambage, and everything should be fine.
We're not the same.
We should say GB women at home at Manchester on the 19th of May against Canada. You'll be able to see the team there. Also, say before you go, very entertaining Twitter account, HCShaw13. Give Hannah a follow. Lots of very eclectic stuff on there. It's not just all about basketball. It's an entertaining read.
It is funny. I am. If I'm nothing else, I'm definitely funny.
Well, you've been funny for us. Thank you so much for joining us today. The very best of luck in camp. We hope we'll personally be seeing you in Riga, but hope the next few weeks goes well with the GB squad.
Thank you very much. And yeah, hopefully see you soon.
We hope so. Thanks, that's for Hannah. And that's it for this edition. You can subscribe to every episode via your preferred podcast provider or listen online at mvp247.com. We also get all the latest basketball news. Another edition of the MVP cast coming very soon. But for now, from me, it's goodbye.